First part of session 103. Let's begin this session with personal material as we're used to and discuss the value of self-worth. Let's begin. As with the other sessions, there is a lot of personal material in this particular one. A couple of notes. This is the last session in which we're going to talk about the archetypical mind and thus finishes the original material. So if you, for some reason, you're still reading the original books, they went up to session 103. And that's because the rest of the sessions are personal material, everything that is in book 5. If you're reading the raw content, then you will read every session as it was, aside from the commentary, which leads me to the next point, which is the commentary in book 5. Or if you look in the lawofone.info, hint in the description, you can always find the link so you can go read it. Then you will find a commentary of the specific session, something you don't find in the books, whether that's PDF or the physical book. So why am I saying this? Because I highly recommend that you go read the commentary, particularly Carla's comment, which is usually the long one. Jim always has a very short, brief message about the session. But Carla's is a lot more in depth because she was the one mostly invested emotionally in this, what do we call it, trio that were Don, Carla, and Jim. So I highly recommend that you go read that, specifically because we're talking about personal material, like I said, and Carla has a lot to offer there. And moreover, because that material goes into the questions and answers that we're going to cover here. So again, another point, 3 months between session 102 and 103. This was channeled in June 10th, and I'm recording this actually in June, which is interesting, right? So what is it, 41 years later? Wow, exactly my age. So yeah, that's all I can recommend about personal material. Go read the commentary and you'll see more information about this. I'll try to give you a synopsis of what was happening. This will help to understand a little bit more what's in the answers that Ra gives to Carla. First, the issue was ongoing with moving out of that house. More problems with trying to buy a new house. The guy that was selling the house seemed to have been taking advantage of the situation. Don didn't agree. Carla was always trying to please Don. Don was very stubborn and he was already becoming very rigid, or even more rigid than he was. He was like an old-fashioned guy, the way Carla described him. And he, you know, he wouldn't budge. So, yeah, that was a tough situation for Carla to deal with. There's also that particular, I would call it, now we would call it toxic relationship, but it wasn't really toxic itself. It's just that it was dysfunctional in a way, because Don wanted Carla to be in a specific way, and Carla liked to please Don, so that rigidity wasn't very good, but they didn't have toxicity between them. It was just Don was one way and Carla wanted to please him. Like I said, old-fashioned guy from the 40s and 50s, I guess. And yeah, he had his ways and Carla was always trying to please him. So that's what we read in Carla's commentary there. The reason why we mentioned this is because that's going to be relevant to the mental, emotional energies that Carla was investing in all of this situation, trying to help Don, you know, trying to be of service in the way that Don wanted her to be, which was to be not only the channel for the Raw contact, but also to be available for him whenever he was home, because he was the one working out and spending days away from the family, because he was a pilot. So yeah, and the whole situation of the house didn't help. So there was a lot going on. And the last thing that they mention here, or Carla mentions here, is also clothing. Something that we'll read a little bit more in Ra's responses, but there was there was a desire for Carla to buy clothes, and I guess there was a little bit of shame for doing that as well, because of it was too fancy. I have my own two cents to add there from my experience in this regard. But Carla says that they were very poor when they were little, and so she wanted to have more clothes. This typical dynamic that we have with life, in which we feel that we were missing something and now we want to compensate a little bit more. But yeah, she felt that that was a bad relationship, you know, with transient things that were buying clothes. But that affects her, of course, in her own self-judgment, and there's a whole thing going on. But those are the key points. I think I covered everything. Yes. Yeah, it's basically, it's a long commentary. Like I said, go read it. It's important to give an idea of what was going on. And I think something else that she mentions is her weight and her diet, which is something that we have been talking about in the past session. But that's it. That's my briefest summary of the whole. I just refuse to read the whole commentary, because that would add another episode, and I don't think it's necessary. I don't have much to comment, but rather what Ra has to say, and from there extrapolate what's important for us. That's my goal here. So okay, let's go to the first question that I usually cover. And it's Don saying, could you first please give me the condition of the instrument? Ra says, the physical distortions of the instrument remain serious. Further, the vital energies of this mind-body-spirit complex are much diminished, although acceptable for the needs of this working. This is to be noted as the lowest or most distorted vital reading of this all-important energy. There's a little bit more. Actually, Ra says, the mental and mental-emotional distortions are as last seen. We find the will of the instrument having been unwisely used to have incurred the distortions of vital energy. It is well that the instrument ponder this. I'm not sure what they mean with this last. I mean, I understand that Carla used her will unwisely, but encouraging the distortions of vital energy. So was she encouraging the use of vital energies for the contact, which is something that, of course, she wanted to? Or was it that she was encouraging the distortions of vital energy in some other way? I'm not sure. I'm inclined to say that it was towards the contact, because Ra did mention this, that Carla would make available, in essence, all her beingness to this. I guess the difference here, I don't know, this is just a supposition of mine, but it's the intention. So for example, if I go to sleep, right? I remember somebody telling me this years ago. If you go to sleep and you put the intention that you're going to do work while you're sleeping, then you won't get much rest. You know, you're putting a lot of your energy in there. But if you go to sleep and you say, no, all I want to do tonight is rest, and I don't want to use my energy anywhere else, mentally, of course, metaphysically, in the astral, whatever you want to call it, you are reserving all your energy or your state of being for sleeping and resting. So I guess that's a way to see this. And Carla did this whenever she went into trance, just in essence dedicating her whole being to and all her energies to the contact. This parallels what Ra, or rather Carla, said, that she wanted to please Don in the contact with Ra. I mean, she wanted to do the Ra contact as well, but her dedication to be as viable as possible through diet and exercise and keeping herself healthy and so on was also because it made Don happy. So these are the kind of sacrifices that she made. And, you know, that's a dedication. So, yeah, that's my take on all of this. The mental emotional distortions are as last seen, which means I think in the last time they were pretty good. So close to balance, they said, in the last session. So I guess that was fine. But the physical distortions were great. The vital energies were much diminished, as Ra says. And though they are acceptable for the work, meaning for the contact, for the session that they were doing, nevertheless, they are in the most distorted or lowest, I guess, that they have seen so far. So, yeah, that's the condition of the instrument. Let's move to the next question. Question two, Don says, what is the situation with respect and condition with respect to the physical problems with the digestive portions of the body that the instrument had previously? There is a kind of an, I'm hesitant to call it anomaly, but there's a different thing going on here. Well, first, Dawn's question is about her health, basically. Ra says, the yellow ray, we must correct ourselves. I am Ra, please expel breath across this instrument's chest area. So this was an indication to be done while the session was ongoing, while the channeling was ongoing, and they did. They started to say something about the yellow ray, but they paused, and then they asked this to be continued with the session, or to continue with the session, to be able to continue with the session. Then Ra says, so note that there is no question here. That's the gap that I said. It's something unusual. I think it's the first time that we see this, that there is no second question, but rather after expelling the breath as suggested by Ra, then Ra goes without a question and says, the channel is now satisfactory. We find the yellow ray, chemical body of the instrument, to be exhausted, but to be attempting the improvement by action such as exercise and diet. We may state that the infection has not completely left the body complex, although it is far less virulent, or virulent, I'm not sure. Virulent, I will say. So yeah, the interesting here, in terms of just the structure of the raw contact, is that this is considered a second Q&A, although there is no question. I'm not sure why wouldn't they put it into question two. It seems like it was part of the same moment, right? Don asked a question, that was question two. Then Ra begins to answer. They have to do something in the middle of it, and then they finish the answer. So I feel like this should be question two, not three, but that's how they have it. I didn't check in the physical books, but I know that in, I take it from the material I take from lawofone.info, which is the same as the books, but yeah, maybe that's one of the things that they'll change in the future. Who knows? In any case, her body was exhausted, but to be attempting the improvement by actions such as exercise and diet. Okay, so even though her body was deteriorated, she was dedicated to the exercise and diet to improve her condition. And the infection that she had, which is the question that Don had, hasn't left. She still has the infection, but is a lot less intense, let's say. And yeah, that's the situation with her health. I think we now move into the questions. Where do we start? I think it's here where we begin the question four. Question four is where we start. book five material. Yeah, for the last time, we're moving between book four and book five. The rest of the sessions are going to be book five. And the rest of the session actually is going to be book five. So, okay. Question four, Dawn says, the instrument asks the question, why she lost her joy in her recent past. Lost her joy in the recent past. Would Ra comment, please? So here we have a relatively long answer and full of information. Ra says, the instrument made a free will decision not to address the physical catalyst causing great pain by means of the allopathically prescribed chemical compound, which the instrument was sure would be efficacious due to its reliance upon the suggestions of Ra. So first, Carla decided not to deal with the pain with medicine, which she knew that would be efficient due to the reliance upon Ra's suggestions. So I guess it seems like Carla didn't take her medicine or her analgesics, her painkillers, or whatever it was, right? That's the allopathically prescribed chemical compound, which deals with the pain that she was having. So whatever analgesics she was taking, she didn't willingly take, okay? So why has she lost her joy? Well, Ra continues and says, thus, because of this, the catalyst was given in a more complete form. The outer service to others became nearly impossible, causing the entity to experience, once again, the choice of the martyr, that is, to put value in a fatal action and die, or to put value on consciousness of the creation and of the one creator, and thereby live. The instrument, through will, chose the latter path. So, yeah. She, in essence, faced the, because of the increase in pain, she had to, I guess, be less mobile and less available for other people. And that, of course, brings a sort of mental state. And I think Ra's going to talk about this. Because imagine that you're always willing to go and help people and do things. Carla mentioned this several times, that she wanted to help as many people as possible that would go to her and welcome them in her house. And that's a lot of work, you know, mental investment in helping people through advice and listening to them and so on. So when you're in pain, you can't do this. So now you have to sacrifice that. But that wasn't the sacrifice that Ra is talking about here. The sacrifice is actually the... should I sacrifice myself, right? The martyrdom syndrome of always giving yourself for others, which, again, it's not something bad. It's just how some people act and react. So that was the sacrifice, to sacrifice that for her health, which seems a little bit more reasonable to my point of view, of course. I would rather be healthy and safe so I can be of longer service than to, you know, destroy myself in giving too much. And to one degree or another, we have all felt this catalyst of, you know, the universe sort of puts this in our face and says, do you want to sacrifice yourself for others? And sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. So we find balance and wisdom there. That is what we develop through this catalyst of martyrdom, wisdom. So, she chose to obviously remain a little bit more in herself. You see, to put value on consciousness of the creation and of the one creator. To me, that sounds like just dedicating yourself or your energy and your beingness to just, you know, be and just to... appreciate life and not erode yourself, erode, to Yes. Wear yourself down. So there's more to say, and I think now we go into the mental emotional state of Carla. Ross says, however, the mind and mental emotional distortions did not give the support to this decision necessary to maintain a state of unity which this entity normally experiences and has experienced since its incarnation's beginnings. Since this catalyst has been accepted, the work begun to remove distortions blocking the indigo ray might well be continued apace. So I'm not going to talk about the indigo ray much because the next question involves this aspect of the answer. But Ra is saying that I guess her own mind didn't help in the decision, although she willingly chose. And I love this because this describes so much what we face on a daily basis, which is we make a decision, especially when we are becoming more aware of what's beneficial for us in a spiritual way. So for example, if you were used to doing something in the house or at work or reacting in a way, this was your state of being, and now you are thinking, wait, there is a more compassionate or wise way to approach this, then you begin to make that decision or take that decision. Yes? So you're changing the way you are, just like Carla was changing the way she was. She wouldn't sacrifice herself anymore and try to bring, you know, herself to, like, the decision was the appropriate, let's say. Okay? Does that mean that your mind is going to agree with it? Mm-mm. Absolutely not. And we often feel this. We see that our mind is almost trying to convince us that, are you sure you made the right decision? I mean, we could be doing this. We should have reacted that way. The mind is so used to this conditioned pattern that, of course, is going to offer it again and talk about it. And so we feel all this sort of conflict, inner conflict. And so we enter a sort of cognitive dissonance. And that's what we deal with when we are in this process of changing, of transforming, of literally the death of the old self provides or invokes this conflict in our mind. So I think this is normal. And how we learn to deal with this conflict, which is, let's say, if we get experience, we gain experience by dealing with this inner conflict of the decision that we wholeheartedly picked as the most appropriate, and yet the conflict of the mind in disagreement with it. The more we experience this conflict in several, let's call them catalysts, right, or transformations of the mind, the more we evolve around the capacity that we have to deal with this catalyst, or rather with this conflict, not with the particular catalyst, but with the conflict itself. In other words, the more we face this conflict, this inevitable conflict of the mind telling us, oh, you should not have done this, we could have done it the other way, and probably better to be safe this way, and so on. The more we deal with this and we allow this to happen, then the easier it is for us to make decisions in the future that will carry over this transformation, and less conflict will be felt. Because at the beginning, there's a lot of doubt. In the future, we become a lot more accustomed to just intuitively living as opposed to living through the mind. I think it's a normal thing to happen. So this is what was happening with Carla, in my understanding, right? When Ross says the mind and mental emotional distortions did not give the support to this decision necessary to maintain a state of unity or harmony, peace, calm, equanimity, right? To maintain a state of unity, which this entity normally experiences and has experienced since its incarnation's beginnings. So, yeah, that's precisely what it is. You know, she was used to living in peace, joy, calm, you know, this joyful being, and the mind was not giving her that. So we all know what this feels like. This is not something, some extravagant experience that Carla was having. We all deal with this. And then Ra says, since the catalyst has been accepted, then she's beginning to remove the distortions blocking the indigo ray, which was clouded, let's say. The indigo ray was clouded by this conflict. But once you accept the catalyst and you say, listen, whatever the mind says, I'm just going to go through it because I know my heart says it's right. And I don't care what the mind says. I'll continue to go and reap the results of this decision because it makes sense to me. And so at that point, you accept the catalyst, you work with it, you become this space that I say, become that space of acceptance and compassion towards the mind, and it'll begin to dissolve. Those clouds will begin to dissolve, and guess what? Indigo ray gets unblocked. Let's talk about that. Question 5. Don says, could Ra recommend work appropriate for removing indigo ray blockage? So I love this question because in the last session, they talk about removing blockages from yellow ray. And so Ra says, we cannot recommend for the general situation, for in each case, the distortional vortex is unique. In this particular nexus, the more appropriate working is in the mental and mental-emotional powers of analysis and observation. When the strongest and least distorted complex is set in support, then the less strong portions of the complex shall be strengthened. So, beautiful. There is no general recommendation because each and every one of us is different. Okay, that's actually a very general answer. There is no specific answer we can give you, thus we need to be general. In Carla's particular case, at the moment, the more appropriate working is in the mental and mental-emotional powers of analysis and observation. So in this case, again, what I was saying, she took the decision, and now the mind was kind of, it was complaining, it was arguing against that decision. Like I said, this is very normal. The conditioned mind will try to, it's almost like trying to fill the gap that you created. It seems like there was a gap. That gap is needed for a new harmonious relationship with being to arise. That gap is needed. But the mind, feeling that gap, it's going to try to move into it with all this convincing story. So in this case, the powers of analysis and observation were the more appropriate. And Ra says something, it seems a bit confusing, but when you reread it, you kind of understand it. When they say, when the strongest and least distorted complex is set in support, so that part of ourselves that is strong and less distorted, when it's used in support of that which is less strong, some issues here. Okay, so when the strongest and least distorted complex is set in support, my microphone sometimes acts up, then the less strong portions of the complex shall be strengthened. So yeah, when the strongest part of ourselves is set in support, then it'll balance the least distorted, the most distorted rather, and less strong portions of ourselves. And in this case, it was, yeah, this capacity for the power of analysis and observation, as Ra said. Ra finishes this and says, This entity has long worked with this catalyst. However, this is the first occasion wherein the drugs to dull the pain that sharpens the catalyst have been refused. So, again, we have dealt with catalysts over time, and it's only when we face it in a different way that we feel like, oh my God, I haven't dealt with this ever like this before. And so this invites us always to not to take a stand of, oh yes, you know, I already know how to deal with this, but rather to know that what happened happened, and you didn't deal with it. You just kind of allow it to be, right? You just absorbed it in you. But then it may return, like Ra suggests here, that Carla had already been working with this catalyst, but this was the first time where she wasn't under the influence of the analgesics of whatever medicine she was taking, or painkillers, or yeah, anything that would dull the pain. So that's it. This is the first time that she was working with this catalyst with full pain, and physical pain, of course. So that's, in essence, the gist of this answer. Let's move to the next one. Question 6. Dawn is interested in the fifth density negative companion. It says, what is the present situation with respect to our fifth density service to self-oriented companion? Ra says, this entity has, for some period of your space-time, been at rest. However, it has been alerted to the workings taking place and is soon to be your companion once again. Again, just a refresher on the negative entity that was still, of course, working heavily on Carla. Let me mention that I feel that... again, I'm just drawing parallel universes here. If Don, Carla, and Jim had perhaps taken another route and worked more on themselves to be more open and accepting, more communication, of course, and more and enhancing even more this harmony, I feel like somehow the relationship, particularly with Don, of course, started to deteriorate, and that caused so many things that were, you know, astray. But this, the amelioration of this entity would have been a thing, you see, the dissipation of this heavy fifth density negative influence would have been dissipated. It's my thinking, of course. We always think back and we say, oh, what could have been better? But again, they did everything that was appropriate, and yet they wanted to continue channeling Ra, which is the thing that was also providing so much more of this environment for the negative entity to continue to bring balance to the information that they were bringing and everything that they were absorbing. So yeah, this is, like I've said, this is a way for the universe to balance itself depending on, you know, the seeking and the intensity of that seeking. I have often compared this to the use of entheogens, which is psychedelics in general, and how, you know, they are great, they're useful, they provide, you know, many experiences, but the integration of that and the gentle, the gentle integration of that experience is not probably, definitely much more important than the experience itself. So I guess what I'm trying to say here, if that integration in the raw contact would have been a little bit more gentle, then perhaps they would have fared better. Okay, so moving on. Don says in question 7, can Ra recommend anything that the instrument can do or that we can do to improve any of the energies of the instrument? So I'm going to read the next two questions, because Ra says here, this is previously cover material. We have outlined the path the instrument may take in thought. Then Don says, I didn't mean to cover previously cover material. I meant to add any of this to specifically focus on at this time the best possible thing that we or the instrument could do to improve these energies, the salient activity. So he's begging again for more information. It's Don caring about Carla, of course, and his love for the raw contact. So Ra says, before responding, we ask your vigilance during pain flares, as the channel is acceptable, but is being distorted periodically by the severe physical distortions of the yellow ray chemical body of the instrument. Those salient items for the supporter group are praise and thanksgiving in harmony. These the group has accomplished with such a degree of acceptability that we cavil not at the harmony of the group. So, first, please check that there, I guess, the information, right? Ask your vigilance as to any information that may sound strange, because she's having a lot of pain flares, and is a good refresher for those who have been listening so far that sometimes when the body, Carla's body, had some pain flares, the information being transmitted was not accurate, or sometimes misword or something like that. Yeah, these things, they need to keep vigilance in how they receive the information. So Carla, of course, was feeling all of this and all this pain. Well, not Carla, but the body was feeling all this pain. And that, of course, Ra said, pay attention, there may be something that we say that is wrong. But once again, they emphasize that the salient items are praise and thanksgiving in harmony, which is a beautiful way to just say, remain calm, remain, you know, chill, we would say in our modern language. Chill out and enjoy life. So these activities the group have accomplished to such a degree of how they were capable of doing it, that Ra is basically not going to nitpick or quibble about how much they could have done. So this is another important message here for ourselves and how we deal with others. So something to keep in mind, for example, we can see from here that, of course, like I just mentioned, Carla, Don, and Jim could have done better. We all can do better. But given the circumstances, what you do, as long as you do the best that you can, that's it. Putting your mind in I could have done it this way better. I could do this way better this way. It's not going to help. It's only going to create anxiety and all this. It's going to perturb your already harmonious being. You see? So, yeah, why do that? Just allow yourself to be in the best way possible, and that's it. Just be satisfied with what you do, basically. And that's what Ra says, you know, we do not cavil. Which again, it's like quibbling. I think it's a good substitution for cavil. Not to nitpick into small details that could be improved. No, just as you are, you're doing the best, and that's it. Given your distortions and everything else you have, you see, that's pure acceptance. You're there. You're good. Everything's fine. As opposed to just saying, I could have done better. I should have done this. And the mind's going to do that, of course, like I said before. It's not going to accept this as appropriate. It always wants it better. So don't dwell on that. Allow the mind to do that. That's fine. You know, you don't want to repress it. But you don't want to fall in line with it and say, oh, yes, you know, I could have done so much more. I'm failing. I'm a failure, and so on. You can see what the mind is going to do there. So, yeah, that they're doing correct, or at least at the most they could do. Ra continues and says, as to the instrument, the journey from worth in action to worth in esse, or esse, is arduous. The entity has denied itself in order to be free from that which it calls addiction. This sort of martyrdom, and here we speak of the small but symbolically great sacrifice of the clothing, causes the entity to frame a selfhood in poorness which feeds unworthiness, unless the poverty is seen to be true richness. There's one more paragraph, I think, but this is where we get some really good information. Okay, so first context. As I said at the beginning, Carla made this decision. I probably didn't explain it very well, but here I'll talk more about it. She used to buy clothes to feel better with herself, and that's, I guess, the addiction that she had based on her past of being a child, not having access to all of this. And now that she could, she would do it. But now, because she felt that this was a sort of irrelevant behavior, she stopped doing it. So that was a sacrifice, right? That sacrifice, in order to kind of get rid of the addiction, also had some significance. And that's what they're talking about here. Although Carla said that she would enjoy this with her mother for years to come, and continue to buy for each other, actually. So her mom would buy stuff for her and she would buy stuff for her mom. So I think that was cute. You see, it's not the action itself, it's how we feel about ourselves is what's important. Actions mean absolutely nothing. It's how we feel about ourselves in the face of those actions. So I think Ra is going to strengthen my point here. But all right, the journey from worth in action, so going and doing this, to worth in esse, which means in being as it is, that journey is arduous. She denied herself, right? She denied herself the pleasure of buying clothes to try to get rid of the addiction. This sort of martyrdom, once again, in Carla, of sacrificing herself for some greater good, and they're talking about, yes, the clothing. She frames herself, look what's behind in her subconscious, right? She's framing herself as poor, which feeds unworthiness. Unworthiness kills, in essence, the energy going up to Indigo Ray. You have to feel worthy. That is, unless the poverty is seen to be true richness. So, for example, minimalism. Like, I like to be minimalist. I just love that. Somehow, I just feel encumbered by things. And clothing is actually one of those, because I feel like I'm a slave to clothing if I have too many things. Or, in my own experience, this is what I wanted to share that I said at the beginning. I feel like the more I fall into a specific style of clothing, then the more I'm a slave to that. And so I return back to basics, or just whatever whims I get into buying clothes. And that's why when I look back, and I guess some people would look at me and say, like, you have no sense of fashion. I don't. But that's a particular thing. You see, I find a lot of richness in not poverty itself, but minimalism, I guess. And yeah, the less things I have, the better, I guess, I feel. I do cherish, and that's one thing that I know, and it's hard to give up things that have meaning. So, for example, this little Shiva was gifted to me by an old Indian lady, beautiful woman, who actually just, you can't see it if you're on YouTube, but you can see another Shiva here. It's in the frame. Speaking of frames, it's another Shiva, and she gave it to me just over the weekend. So yeah, things like that have a lot of meaning to me, and so it's hard for me to get rid of them. So I used to carry a lot of those things that are meaningful, but eventually I had to get rid of a lot of them. And that's something that, you know, you feel kind of like a pain of getting rid of it, but at the same time, you get pleasure in that. You find that, oh, nice. I think often about books. I see that a lot of people have, like, their own bookshelves filled with books. I have to get rid of all my books as I move so often. So that's another thing that is very, and if you have carried a box of books, then, you know, I have a box of books over there too. You know, things like that. It's easy to get rid of stuff and feel better than to carry all this stuff, at least for me. So you see, that's the kind of balance that we need to find, you know. Who are you in relationship with certain things, and what is valuable, what is not, and not to be attached to things. So in this case, it seems like Carla would frame herself in poorness, right? Feeling unworthy. Like, oh no, I am just not worthy of buying those clothes. You know, why not? I mean, it's one thing to be addicted to. I'm going to satisfy this feeling of poorness with clothes, or simply just to buy it because, you know, it makes me happy to buy new things, and that's fine. It's all about feeding that which makes you feel good, being very aware that it's not filling up a void in you, because you're trying to fill a void of happiness with objects or things, phenomenal things, as opposed to with yourself. That is the key, if I can put it in a way. There's more to say here, and I think there's some great message from Ra when they say, in other words, good works for the wrong reasons. This is a bit confusing. Good works for the wrong reasons cause confusion and distortion. Yeah. We encourage the instrument to value itself and to see that its true requirements are valued by the self. We suggest contemplation of true richness of being. This is incredibly beautiful. Good works for the wrong reasons cause confusion and distortion. When the wrong man uses the right tools work in the wrong way. Basically the same thing. When you do good things for the wrong reasons, then those will become, like Ra says, distorted and confused. So if you think you ought to be minimalist because some guy on YouTube talking about the Law of One said it, and that's going to make you feel better, then yeah, they may cause more confusion and distortion. You have to be happy with yourself the way you are. And actually, like I said, just be vigilant that what you're doing is not providing happiness because you're filling a void, but rather because it is a joyful activity to do so. You see, in the one, you're starting from emptiness, from feeling scarcity, poorness. I need things, whether that be a relationship, whether that be, you know, a particular state of mind or any sort of activity outward, right? I feel empty within, and so I do things outside to fill this void. Well, that is the void of the narakas, actually the pretas, not the narakas, in Buddhism, which is the hungry ghosts, those who are in constant search of a desire that doesn't fulfill them ever. And the more they seek it, the more hungry they become. The more they want, the less there is available. That is the attitude. And we get into this attitude. Sometimes we may say, oh no, I'm definitely not a hungry ghost. But we do have this little hungry ghost. The more we look within the self, we see these little hungry ghosts. Oh, I need to go eat. I need to go and drink something. I need to do this. I need to do that. Pay attention to all of those things. And the more you're able to dispel this little hungry ghost, then you'll shine brighter. Because it's the little ones that matter. You know, the big ones are unavoidable, let's say. Especially at this stage in our awareness expansion. What do I mean by this? The big hungry ghosts are the ones that we're always dealing with. You know, in which there is like an addiction or something like this. And that one we're paying full attention to. It's the little ones that go unseen. And so, yes, this that is the attitude of scarcity. Whereas the attitude of beingness, I'm not going to even call it abundance or plenty self, but just beingness. Beingness is so radiant that it needs nothing to fulfill itself, right? Being is radiant. Now, if you think like, oh, well, in the future, I might be able to be radiant. Right now, I'm very absorbent. You are already radiant, but because you haven't accepted yourself, which, of course, brings us to the disciplines of the personality, know yourself. You can't accept yourself if you don't know yourself. Who are you accepting? Someone else? Some other image of yourself? That's not true acceptance. True acceptance comes from knowledge of self. Know yourself, accept yourself. As you do this, then you begin to value so much more your own being. Ah, here's the key. We suggest contemplation of true richness of being. True richness of being. Well, what do I need to do to be more being? That's like asking, what can I do to be more alive? You are alive. There is no more energy that goes into life, liveness, into being alive. You either are or not, and you are. Once you are, that's it. That's all you need. Some people like to trick this or say, no, you know, when I jump out of a plane, you know, in a parachute or whatever, I feel more alive. That's because you feel dead, simply being, just there. Oh, I feel so much boredom because I have nothing to do. I want to feel alive. I'm going to play video games. I'm going to go drink. I'm going to go outside and do this and that. Why do you feel bored? By simply sitting. These are things that are calling you. See, you want to get things out of the world to satisfy this boredom or this emptiness and so on. Contemplation of true richness of being. Being is free. Being, you have to do nothing about it. And there is joy there. You see? Richness of being. It's beautiful. Being is joy. That's the blockage that was happening in Indigo Ray. So if I can get away with this, I'll say it. What is Indigo Ray, if not, as Ra is suggesting here, joy? Her initial question, Carla's, was, why am I feeling less joy? Well, you're feeling less joy because there is blockage in Indigo Ray because of this, this, and that, they explain already, unworthiness and so on. Remove that, and joy is already there. What do you need to do? Find the richness in being. Being is joy. Where have I heard this? Sat Chitananda. Being is bliss, joy, peace, beauty. That's it. That's what it means. So it's inviting us once again to ourselves, to appreciate this. I'm going to jump into the conclusions from here. So stay alert. One more question, though, before we finish, which is going to be a short one. Question 9, Don says, is there anything else that either we or the instrument can do that would specifically work on the vital energy to increase it off the instrument? And Ra says, we have come up against the full stop of free will. And that's basically saying, nope, we're not going to say anything else. Enough. that's it. They cannot continue to talk about it. I don't know why, but I guess Don was repeating the question in different versions, and to me that's a way of saying, enough, I've given you the only thing that's important. Conclusions. So, as I was saying, this joy in beingness. You see, from an experiential level, I can say that we have this tendency to look at the mind. Please notice that when I talk about the mind, I refer to activity, to experience, to any sort of experience, anything that moves, whether that be thought or physical, so-called physical reality, everything that moves, our mind is hypnotized by all of this. And it's because it's beautiful, you know, it's radiant, it's exuberant, all these dances, you know. Like Ross said in the first session, you know, you are dancing thoughts and you don't know. You are dancing in a ballroom, moving your mind-body-spirit complex in exotic patterns. Because we are there, we're enjoying this illusion of movement. Now here's the thing, at some point we find dissatisfaction. Who said this 2600 years ago? Dissatisfaction or suffering is the nature of reality. So at this point, we say, well, okay, I'm going to find, you know, this spiritual bliss. I'm going to find this awakening. I'm going to find this moksha, nirvana, whatever. And so we go in the inner path. And we go in, we go in. Inner path is characterized by initially, and I'm highlighting the word initially here. Initially highlighted, okay? It's initially characterized by the abandoning of everything. Now, people usually say, I need to abandon my job, my family, my everything, my finances. Some people actually do this. And that's, I guess, a way to do it symbolically. But if you don't abandon really this, and again, I'm not suggesting that this is what you should do, but I repeat, I have found people over the years that have taken this decision. They abandoned everything and they went to literally the most cliche thing, which is India. I need to go to India and, you know, abandon everything and go there. Well, if that's what you have to do, then that's what you have to do. I have nothing against it. But I'm highlighting again that initially this needs to be some form of abandoning everything. My suggestion is do this within a minute. Abandon everything in your mind, absolutely everything, and stay with what remains. It will be uncomfortable first. It will be unsettling. It will be unsustainable. But try it. Try it just for a couple of seconds. Abandon everything. You see, you're abandoning your house, your family, everything, your life completely in this 1 minute. Don't worry, they'll come back. Just like the guy that went to India, he'll come back to the world. Trust me. See what remains. Like I said, it's going to be uncomfortable at the beginning. That's fine. Just know that. And by knowing that, you know that, okay, this feeling of discomfort is normal, natural. But stay there. Keep repeating this exercise. You can do it every day. You don't have to physically abandon anything. You don't have to mentally abandon anything. You know that everything will come back. All your thoughts, all your judgments and your biases and so on, they're going to come back. Just keep exploring this state, which is you. Funny enough, it's you. It's not another dimension. It's not another density. It's not some other being. It's not God. It's you. It's you. It's simply you. Just stay there. Find out what's in there. Over time, it'll be an unexplainable, and I don't want to give expectations. Perhaps you've been doing this for a while, maybe not. I don't mind. I'm just going to say that you will find something that is nothing like you have ever experienced before, because everything that you have experienced is sharing the qualities of impermanence, which is it gives me a momentary joy and it goes away. That is the nature of suffering. Clinging onto things that give you temporary joy. That is not full joy. Those are just facets, glimpses of our true nature. In the moment, due to interaction with things that we find that we need or we desire. Once we get it, guess what? Joy goes out again. Because you're focusing on the wrong thing. Focus on this, the joy of being. When you do this, you're in the state of meditation, which is not a formal state in which you get into a specific position on the floor and get a blank mind. No, the state of meditation is the state of simply being and being satisfied with what is. So if you notice, I just did another iteration of my only teaching practice, which is the direct path. Go straight into your being. Know who you are. Abide there. Why would you want to abide somewhere else? An image of yourself, some idea of yourself. Why would you want to do that? You've been doing it all your life. How does it work? Give this a try. With this, we come exactly, or almost exactly, to the hour, finishing this first episode, first part of session 103. Like I said, the rest of this session is going to be, I think, mostly archetypical mind, if not, right, everything. Let's take a look. Archetypical mind. Yes, everything until possibly the end. There are some extra questions about banishing ritual and other contexts. So what do we have? Like six more questions about archetypical mind. Let's enjoy that in the next part, being the last bit that we have in terms of Law of One model and philosophy, and particularly the archetypical mind. I have nothing else to say, but thank you. When I say thank you, I'm really grateful that you listen to this and you are interested, because over the years, and I calculated already that I have 8 more weeks before I finish the raw material, or the raw contact rather, and I'm going to make a video talking about the future of the channel and the future of the podcast. Don't worry, it's not going to disappear. A lot of people have asked me, what are you going to do when the raw contact finishes? Well, I'm going to be satisfied that it's done, for one. Yeah, it's been a nice project, but it's coming to an end, and it needs to come to an end, and it's going to be substituted by something else. However, I have some reflections to give, so I hope you can tune into that extra episode that I'm going to make. I'm going to make a couple, just to reflections and little honoring to the contact itself and everything. And yes, part of it is going to be the future of the channel and of myself, which I don't know what's going to be the future, but things that I see right now, or what I'm going to see at the moment, which I'm probably going to share a lot of the qualities that I have right now. In any case, I'll just leave that as a cliffhanger for you. I wish you well, you're safe, you are enjoying just being, and with nothing else to say, I'll see you in part 2 of session 103.